COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
WTF1 presents Hot Takes Wednesday.
Welcome back to a post-Brazil edition of Hot Takes Wednesday. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. And while the storm has blown over, the hot takes certainly haven't. And glad you could join us as ever. And we have a familiar face back on HTW for the week. For the first time in a little while, we've wrestled her away from the editing side of the keyboard. It's Charlie Williams. Good to have you back, Charlie. How's it going?
Hello, everybody. Also, you said familiar face, but nobody can see me, so I hope people recognize my voice instead.
How could they not recognize your dulcet southern tones?
Thanks. I really appreciate that. My farmer voice.
To be fair, the amount of jokes I get about my accent all the time, from anywhere from America to Australian, like you don't even know. It's relatable, I promise.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm all good. It's nice to be back and talk some hot takes. I miss giving my opinions on things, although I still do it on Twitter, but actually for people to listen to, because I don't feel like people listen to me on there anyway. But
this is Twitter. It's all just mumbling into the void. People don't listen to anything on that platform anymore. But we do try around here. And I actually haven't mentioned this on the show until now, but I'm going to, because you're here and obviously you do. If you guys don't know, Charlie does like 90% of our website editing stuff, and she does a brilliant job with it. But there's now a little accompaniment to HTW. It's now HTW Extra Heat. Do check it out on the WTFM website every Thursday, where the whole team will now chip in on a selection of takes you hear on the episode. So if you want even more Hot Takes Wednesday, there is now a little website weekly column we now do alongside the podcast as well. I'm honored to be able to share that a little bit more, and you know, growing the Hot Takes family of content, I suppose you could say. So do check that out every Thursday on the website, WTF1.com. Look for the HTW Extra Heat columns. And all of us, me, Charlie, and Hannah, will be chipping in on a few takes from every episode. Should be fun. But as you know, every podcast is somebody's first. So in case you didn't know, here's how this show works. You, the fine WTF1 audience, send in your hot takes. There's a few ways you can do that now. You can check us out on Monday morning on Twitter, WTF1 official. Look out for the post roughly Monday morning, sometimes the afternoon. We try. Most of the time it's Monday morning. And you can send in your tweets regarding. So look out for the hot sauce boil and look out for the Hot Takes Wednesday logo on that. You can send in your takes that way. You can DM me on Instagram, or most social media platforms. You want to follow me on Twitter at Dre_WTF1, or you can follow me on Instagram, DreHarrisonWTF1, over there. You can DM me and I'll try to get some takes on the show every once in a while there as well. Or you can email the show at contact@WTF1.com. All your hot takes get sent in to me on there. So good luck and hope you can send them in. Oh, one more thing before we get going. I would like to do a sprint special next week. So if you've got a take on the sprint format and how you could possibly change things, we'll go into proper detail on next week's show. So send them in now and you've got a much better chance of getting on the show next week. Just throwing that out there.
I have one.
What is it, Charlie?
My hot take for the sprint special is to get rid of them.
I'm shocked that someone would just say, get rid of them. I would never have seen that coming. But just a spoiler, just saying get rid of it probably won't increase your chances. Just throwing that out there. But look, it's not going away. As much as we love to admit it or not, it's not going anywhere. But anyway, point is that once you send in your wonderful takes, me and our guest, in this case, the lovely Charlie, we'll have a little bit of back and forth on them and we'll score them on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being that we strongly disagree, 5 being that we strongly agree. So, Charlie, I know you're a bit rusty, but you're back in the chair. Are you ready for another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday?
I am. I'm really glad you explained which way the scale was, because I forget every time. And it's been a while, so I'm glad.
And this is why I say on the show, every show is someone's first, including yours, apparently. Who knew?
Yeah, well, we all know I'm not the sharpest tool in the box, so it's fine. Let's go. I'm ready.
Her words, not mine. No, just thought I'd point that out. Take number one comes from the S Margie on Twitter. And S Margie says, oh, shocker, it's a Charles Leclerc take. I wonder why. They're coming off the back of Brazil. quote, Charles won't be with Ferrari by 2025. He will either retire for his own sanity or be with Mercedes. I do like how that's worded. That's quite funny. Charles won't be with Ferrari by 2025. He will either retire for his own sanity or be with Mercedes. Well, coming off the back of seemingly an electronics failure of some kind on the Ferrari that put Charles Leclerc in the wall on the formation lap of all things. I can't believe I'm saying this is the second did not start of Charles's career already. Most drivers never have one. He's got two, which is outrageous. Charlie, how do you feel about this one?
I mean, for his sanity or everyone else's sanity? yeah. I mean, his contract is until the end of 2025, right?
Right.
So I don't think he's the type of guy to like not see out his contract and just leave the team in even more disarray than they already are. So no matter what they've done to ruin him, I feel like he'll stick by them until his contract ends, at least. Charles is a really funny one. Throughout all the rumours he's ever had of him leaving the team, I've never really believed them because he's such a Ferrari guy. Like, it's the team that he's always wanted to be with. It holds a lot of sentimental value. He's always wanted to do it for Jules. But at what point does he start choosing his head over his heart? And I mean, I wrote an article earlier this week detailing all the things that have hindered him.
It's an astonishing list. When you actually see it and you actually visualize it, it's like, holy hell, how has he been this unlucky?
Yeah, like when I started it, I was kind of like, all right, so there's going to probably be like at least 6 examples. No, there was 14. 14.
Yep.
And like,
that's just this season.
Yeah. And admittedly, some of them were his fault, but I would say only 2. Instagram have other ideas, but they can get in the bin. They're not wrong. They're not right. Anyway, and then there are a lot of issues at Ferrari. And it's not just strategy. It's not just pit stops. It's not just the up and down nature of the car. I don't know. It blows my mind, actually, that Ferrari, like a Ferrari, is the only person, the only car to have not, like, that's not a Red Bull, to have won a race this season. Like, that is mental when you think about all the problems that Charles alone has had. I mean, I wouldn't even want to calculate Carlos's on top of that. I don't think it's as many as no. Charles, bless him, but it would just certainly be up there. I don't know. I don't know where Charles would go. I don't see him as a Mercedes man. Not like they're doing much better right now either at the moment, to be honest.
That was like the one prevailing rumour that came around Imola sort of time earlier this year, and I was like, oh, maybe a Hamilton-Leclerc swap deal of some kind. Like we're playing football.
Yeah, I wasn't buying it.
Me neither.
No, I couldn't see him there. I don't know. I would see him more at Red Bull, but I don't want him at Red Bull while Max is there, because they have a very good, respectful relationship at the moment. And I don't think, that would certainly create tension. And I don't think Charles is a good number two driver, which you have to be to go into Red Bull. I think he's worth more than that. And I wouldn't like to think that he would retire that early either, because, I mean, it's no secret, I've said this before, I don't like, Charles isn't like up there for me, like not in terms of, I don't know, Lewis, Max, Lando, like, he's not there, but he's still, like, an incredibly good driver. So I really wouldn't like to see him retire. And I don't think he's had his best days in Formula One yet. He's had some great days, but I think we've still got much more to see from Charles if he can get the car underneath him. So... I don't know. There's this real like problem. This is going off track a little bit, but I think there's a real problem at the moment with like the grid is just so good. Like all the drivers in the top teams are just like amazing drivers, and I feel like the grid is almost. I don't think we're gonna see that much change in the grid over the next couple of years until there's a retirement, one big retirement, and then I think we can probably. Yeah. Get a bit mixy up, but so I just don't see where he'd go, to be honest.
I'll tell you how I feel about it. I mean, first of all, I completely agree. I mean, I wrote about this on the website last week for a DRE after Mexico, seeing the five rookies that we had take part in that FP1 session, and I was like, there's a good chance at least four of you don't make it, and that made me feel kind of sad in a sense, because you're absolutely right, the grid is loaded. I'd say there's about 15 or 16 rock solid seats in F1 right now that are just going to be unmovable, at least for the next couple of years, I'd argue. So that's certainly an off tangent point, because I actually did get a DM from someone. I think it was the Tiffy's Left Hand on Twitter that DM'd me saying there'll be no new drivers on the grid till 2026, which I thought was actually quite an interesting take. I might use that for in a couple of weeks' time. But yeah, here's how I feel about Charles getting a little bit on topic. One, I've been on the more positive end of Charles in his career. I think he's a top three or four driver in F1. I think the only two guys I would definitely take over him are Max and Lewis. There's a few debatables, Fernando, Lando. I could argue one way or the other. I think you could go either way on that. He has been bitterly unlucky over the course of his career, and me and Charlie joined forces for a long form video that will probably be out by the time this podcast goes out. By the time you listen to this, and we weighed it up, and we're like, I'm writing that script. I was like, no, Charles has certainly had the rough end of the stick, luck wise in Formula One since he's been there. He's in a team that doesn't fully back him. They've put themselves in a bit of a pickle because Carlos Sainz is not. I think he's in the ballpark of Leclerc as a driver. I think they're certainly very, very evenly matched, which doesn't help because 1-2 structures tend to work better in F1 than having two elite drivers in the same camp. That's generally how I feel about it. But addressing it from the perspective of the take, I don't think Charles is a contract bailer. I don't think he's going to kick up a stink and try to get out of that contract early. I don't think he's going to Mercedes either. I think George is one of their guys. He's a feel-good story for the Mercedes Academy in general. About time they promoted someone worth a damn. And if you listen to Lewis Hamilton, and look, retirement speeches are always up and down. You never quite know for sure, but the way he's talking, he wants five more years. He wants to race into his 40s. So, I would put Hamilton in what I call golden handcuffs territory, where he's there at Mercedes for life if he wants to be, because he's done so much for them. He's still one of the best drivers in the world. Like, if he wants to be at Mercedes for the rest of his career, he will be, because Toto is not going to turn his back on Lewis Hamilton. He is Mercedes at this point. They're a huge part of his brand and vice versa. So. I completely agree with you, Charlie. There is no easy way out for Charles in this scenario. There is no situation that says to me, this is a better one than what he's got at Ferrari right now. Like, Red Bull are not going to hire an elite-level driver in their other seat. I know Christian Horner said that he was looking at Lando Norris, but do you take Christian Horner's word for anything? Like... He's like, the man is a liar, because team politicians are. That's what they do. Like, if they weren't, they wouldn't be doing their jobs properly. There's no better scenario for him than what he's got at Ferrari right now. They're a debatable second best team in F1 right now. They're fighting for second in the constructors right now. They have the resources to compete. You know, they've not had a proper title campaign in some time, but there's McLaren are locked in. Aston Martin have got Fernando as long as he wants. And Lance Stroll is locked in. Red Bull has got Max. And do you really want to be Max's number two? I don't think you do. I think Leclerc's been good enough to win races where he's at right now, let alone going to do it in purple and play second fiddle to Max, which nothing good in F1 has ever come from being Max Verstappen's teammate. Nothing. Like, and that's no disrespect to Max. It's just because he's that good. It's just the way it is right now. So for me, I don't, one more point to agree with you, Charlie. He's a Ferrari lifer, Charles. There is a deep emotional bond with Charles and that team that runs deeper than most driver-team relationships. The Jules Bianchi connection, of course. Ferrari really was his dream team. He got in incredibly quickly. He's been backed with a 5-year contract. Formula One doesn't give out 5-year contracts very often. They did it for a reason because they looked at Charles as their guy. Look, I'm a massive Sebastian Vettel fan, and one was when he was in F1, was from his Red Bull days. The moment I knew they gave Charles a 5-year deal, I was like, yeah, Seb's finished at this team. I knew right there, and then I was like, that's their guy, because they would never give a driver a 5-year contract otherwise. Mm-hmm. That just does not happen in this sport. Not even Max got 5 years, which is crazy to me. So with all that in mind, I'm going to say one here. I don't normally say one very often, but I get the idea that, Charles is going to go mad because of how much Ferrari has made mistakes and made errors and the frustration of it. I don't see him as someone that's going to kick up a stink and try to leave. And even if he was, where the hell would he go? Because there's no better option on the table for him right now. So I'm going to say one. How about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the one as well. I agree. He's not going anywhere before his contract ends. And even so, where on earth is he going? I think, I don't know, if something big happened and, I don't know, say Verstappen and Hamilton retired at the same time, I think then we can probably jump Charles back into a conversation on where does he go and will he leave Ferrari? But that's very unlikely to happen. So I think at this point, he's probably a Ferrari lifer, which is a shame in a way. Well, it's not, but for Charles' sake, for our sake, for every single Ferrari fan out there, their sake, I hope that Ferrari just sort their lives out.
I know what you wanted to say there. I respect the fact this show is PG-13. I could see the way your lips were moving. I completely agree. Look, I want Charles to do well. He's a good dude. He's one of the good drivers. He's one of the genuine, vibrant personalities that F1 has. If the first half of 2022 taught us anything, is that it's a lot more fun when he's at the front challenging for wins. Because that was a very fun first half of the season when Ferrari was genuinely competitive. Shame it all went to crap in the end. See what I did there. But it's not fun seeing Ferrari fight for fifth and sixth when, look, everybody's a Ferrari fan. We want to see them do well. It's a lot more fun when they're competitive, as opposed to, shall we say, when they're not. Hopefully we'll turn that around. Also, people of the internet, please get off this high horse that Charles Leclerc is a bottler. I don't like this narrative about him. I think it's nonsense. He makes one mistake a season. It's like, oh, well, he makes too many errors. Nonsense. Especially with the fact, I've never bought that.
I really hate the pole conversion stat that's doing the rounds at the minute, because I'm not being funny. The last 2 years have been completely dominated by Max Verstappen. What do you expect? Anybody's pole conversion in these last 2 years is not going to be looking great with Rocket Red Bull taking all the wins. So,
and the way their cars are, Ferrari's built for one lap pace, Red Bull's built for race pace. You're not going to convert very many poles when that's the philosophy of your team. like he's at 22 career pole positions, and he's like, it's weird that I looked at the list and like I considered maybe one of them a genuine bottle, and that was France last year, and that was a genuine howler. But besides that, nonsense. I've never bought into that bottle of mentality. Anyway, enough about Charles Leclerc. Here's take number two. It's a sprint take. Oh, this is going to be fun. Alexander Dills on Twitter says, time to change the sprint race. Regular F1 drivers shouldn't race in it. It should be development drivers or young drivers. That way we get two championships in one session and the young drivers get experience. So if you're going to have a sprint race change, have it with development or younger drivers. We get two championships in one session and the young drivers get experience. How do you feel about that, Charlie?
Oh, my eyes are twitching.
It's a sprint take. Charlie's blood has boiled. She's turning bright red on the screen right now. You can't see it.
Well, I feel like I always make my feelings on sprint races very clear, and that's just to get rid of them. Even after Brazil, I tweeted, still not a fan of sprints, FYI. And people were replying, like, not even after that? And I was just like, after what? Like, I feel like as an F1 fan, as F1 fans, our bar of what makes a great race has like significantly dropped this year. Because honestly, like it was all right. Like it wasn't terrible. I actually like, to be honest,
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Brazil sprint for what it's worth.
I enjoyed it, but it wasn't like people on Twitter were making out like it was the race of the century. I can't, it's a note on there for me.
We have to get you on the sprint episode next week now, because you like your kettle is boiled over this. It's hilarious to see in real time.
I am going to go on a bit of a sprint rant before I get to the actual take, but I just think sprints are useless. They do nothing to affect the main race anymore. I hate that qualifying is on the Friday. As a writer, it just throws me completely off. And even before this was my job, it used to frustrate me that I'd be at work and miss qualifying, like one of the main events of the weekend. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I am a bit of a nerd and I love practice sessions and I will take that to my grave. But like, don't look at me like that, Dre. You know how much I love a practice session.
You do.
But like, I was always so disappointed about missing them too on a Friday, but like, I could live with it. But qualifying, nah, that's too far. You don't take that away from an F1 fan. No, thank you. I just like, every sprint weekend, it's just the same again. Qualifying, the same format, just a little bit shorter. Like, and they're just pointless. They're so pointless. I really like, I can't get on board with them. I'm going to have to, because F1 aren't going to get rid of them, because apparently there are all these people out there that love the sprint races that it must mean that they must keep them.
Well, in their eyes, it's more fun than a practice session. So they're going to watch it.
But like, my thing is, no, it's not more fun. That's not what they mean. They mean that they're getting more people in on a Friday and they're selling more tickets and it's making more money. That's the bottom root of the sprint races. That is why they are there.
No, 100%.
But in saying that, as much as I hate them and I have to get to grips with the fact that they are staying here, if they are going to stay, I would be open to like a big change, like a big shake-up in the format, whether that be reverse grid, which has been spoken about God knows how many times, and I don't know why they don't just trial it for everybody's sanity and for everybody to just shut up about it if it doesn't work, or a one-lap shootout for qualifying so that I'm not re-watching the same qualifying that I did the night before.
Right.
Or I saw this suggestion about the bringing in like reserve drivers, and I was kind of like, do you know what? I could get on board with that. They are right. It could give drivers who have perhaps graduated from junior categories but haven't found a full-time seat in F1 to race at those selected sprint events and keep their heads in the door and hopefully impress the right people. The one person I think of the most when I think of this is Felipe Drugovich, because he has been very open and honest about not wanting to do anything else on the side of Formula One. He's kind of just he's basically waiting, and you know, he would really benefit from being able to participate in these kind of like sprint events. I like that it'd be almost like a separate championship, so it wouldn't affect like the actual championship. So that I could get on board with that. The only downside, I think, is that a lot of reserve drivers do have other commitments alongside Formula One.
Yeah.
So scheduling and finding the right driver could become an issue. But, and then, you know, if you go for all younger drivers, it effectively just becomes another like feeder series kind of thing. Like it's, but I think there's lines you'd have to, there would need to be a lot of fine tuning to make it work, but I could actually get on board with that. But otherwise, burn the sprints.
A Charlie rant for the ages, I must say.
It's been a while.
Oh, I've missed your rants, Charlie. Look, what can I say?
I've ranted so much, I've lost an AirPod. There we go.
she's lit. Her head is so hot; it's melted the AirPods around her. Look, I read this like again. There is some credence to what you're saying. I mean, look. I'll save some of my thoughts on the sprint for next week, but what I will say this, they're not going to get rid of him. You're absolutely right where that's concerned. More people are invested in Friday and Saturdays with this format. There's no getting around that. And that's why it's not going to go away. The promoters make more money if they can sell more weekend tickets. And honestly, it's the way motorsport is going right now. Like, I grew up a World Superbikes fan. They went from two races a weekend to three. Formula E is loaded with double headers on its calendar now. IndyCar's added an exhibition race for 2024. You know, the way motorsport is going right now, it's going in the direction of trying to get more bang for your buck. That's how it goes. So there is something to that. More on that next week. But what I was going to say in response to Alex's take is that, isn't that just what Formula 2 is? Because Formula 2 has a sprint race format. It has reverse grids for said sprint race. You know, what this take shows to me, and this is not personal against you, Alex, in general, people do not care about Formula 2 on a mainstream level at all, because you've got that. You've got the next generation of potential talent with reverse grids and a sprint race right now in Formula 2. And you'd think people would be flocking to that idea. But do people just want the Formula 1 coat of paint that it comes with them? Because like I think that's probably why the F1 Academy, for example, it's a big deal that they're going to be on the support grid for next year, and the extra gloss and the clout that comes with being a part of the Formula One package. Maybe that's the reason why this has been suggested as an example. I mean, I haven't got a big problem with it, but would teams ever trust their younger drivers to take part in a race format when they haven't got a lot of seat time in the first place? Because, I mean, look, right now, if you're lucky as a young or reserve driver, you might get two FP1s a year. Right now, because I know Drugovich is getting two, Pato Award's getting one, you know, and he's a fantastic IndyCar driver and whatnot. And there's other guys like, we'll see, Fio Porcher, Ollie Bearman, etc. But I do wonder, would a team ever trust a younger driver to, shall we say, you know, take an F1 car, put him with a bunch of other relatively inexperienced drivers and trust them over a full race distance or even a sprint race distance, which is one third of the race. That would be a big ask for a lot of teams. I remember when this sprint race first came around, that teams complained about the cost cap side of it because they were like, well, what if we get crash damage? And this is with the full experienced grid, let alone younger drivers, which are probably going to be a bit more prone to making mistakes. So, you know.
I mean, yeah, there would, like I say, there would be a lot of fine tuning that would need to happen. Like that, it would be a big step to make it that way. But I don't think it would be completely like Formula 2. I mean, completely different cars, for one.
Obvious.
But like, I don't know. I think there isn't very many. It's kind of like going back to what we said earlier. The grid is just so good now that the feeder series is like creating a real problem. I mean,
it's a bottleneck.
Yeah. I mean, if Teo Pourchaire wins again this year, which
looks likely.
Then he will be yet another driver that has graduated from Formula 2 and won't have a seat in Formula 1 next year.
Third year running, the champs not had a seat straight away because Piastri and Drogovic were in the same boat.
Yeah. And then even just before, like, even if you go a little bit further than that, like, it was obviously Mick the year before, but...
Two and none.
Yeah. And then Nick... And he's only just got his opportunity, and then it quickly flew away. So
relatively speaking, Nick was an outlier. You don't normally get an F1 chance 2 or 3 years after you win the F2 title, which Nick was always kind of swimming against the tide because he was in that same loaded 2019 group with Russell, Norris and Albon that all came up together. That never happens in F1 anymore. We have three graduates in the same season.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen again the way F1's going.
Exactly. So that's kind of... I feel like the feeder series is very slowly becoming more and more broken. So I feel like if you did the sprint like this, it would offer like a bit more opportunity for those younger drivers that are basically just being like cast to the side. Like, I mean, you know, Oscar... It's very lucky, really, that he is so talented that he took a year out and has still come into Formula One as a rookie.
He got
and
very
absolutely
lucky
blown it away. But a year off from driving, I think people don't realise, like, it's, I mean, you know, drivers will be like, oh, it's like riding a bike, but you're still stepping up to a much faster, much more powerful car. And after a year of not driving anything, and then just all of a sudden you get given this like machine. I don't know. So yeah, there's definitely, it's not something that they could just like be like, right, let's start this in 2024. But I think there could be something there.
You'd have to be offering out more testing time, more free practice sessions.
Yeah.
Maybe even running a third car certain weekends, maybe to make that work. And, you know, obviously financially, you'd have to figure out ways of making that work as well, because that's a lot of resources to be able to do that. But I must admit, you've kind of talked me round on this. Like, I was originally going to say this thing was a 2. I'm actually going to go up to a 3 on this one, because... I was going to disagree. The more I think about it, the more I kind of warm to the idea where maybe with some tweaks it could work. Maybe it could help alongside Formula 2 to help promote the next generation of talent. A more direct, you know, example of star talent that could work in the long run, get more F1 fans invested in younger talent like that, and in F2 in general as a series, as a cross-promotion sort of vibe. You've talked me around on it. I'm gonna say 3. I was gonna say 2 on this originally, but I've actually come around a bit on the idea. So I'm gonna say 3.
I'm gonna go 4, but not because like I'm really like an advocate for this idea in it like per se, because like I say, it would take a lot of work. But it's my 4 is mostly directed at the first like 6 words: time to change the sprint race.
You're like RoboCop. You just saw the first sentence and was like, "Okay, I must kill this idea. Just kill it stone dead."
So I very much agree with that. If we can't get rid of them, then they do need changing. So that's my big agreement. It's towards those first 6 words in particular.
Yeah, but I get it. You know, look, I don't have as big a problem with the sprint as most people do. But I could see the argument why you might want to make it a bit more radical. My biggest problem with the sprint in general is it's too safe. It's too much like the Grand Prix, and that's probably its biggest issue. But again, more on that on next week's show. So yeah, if you've got a sprint take, next week's your week. Get them in. Time for a quick ad break here on the WTF1 podcast. But before we get back to Hot Takes Wednesday, this episode is brought to you by the fine folks at LinkedIn. These days, every potential new hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. It's so easy to create a free job post on LinkedIn Jobs. Even I can do it. Then add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and more. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/WTF1. That's linkedin.com/WTF1 to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Right, here's the annoying bit where we have to put the mid-roll in, but after that, we'll be back to the show.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Take number three comes from Luke Howells on Twitter. And this is going to be a fun one because the Verstappen ones always are. Verstappen will only be an all-time great if he wins the World Drivers' Championship for another team. Ah, the old two-team argument. Verstappen will only be an all-time great if he wins the title for another team. I'll take this one first on this one, I think. Luke, this is not you personally, but here's what I would say in response to this perspective. Is Sebastian Vettel not an all-time great? Is Ayrton Senna not an all-time great? Is Jim Clark not an all-time great? Is, you know, like, these are the sort of names. Is Fernando Alonso, is he not an all-time great? Because these are all one team, one manufacturer champions in F1 history. There's been many of them, and I don't think anybody's looking at Ayrton Senna and going, he should have really won a world title in that Tolman. That's really what would have sealed his all-time great argument for me. I get why people make this notion that, you know, the proof of the quality of the driver is if he goes elsewhere and wins there too. I get it. And some great champions have. Lewis Hamilton, obviously, probably the biggest example of that. I don't read too much into that, and the reason why I don't is because the best car wins anyway in F1. 99% of the time, the best car wins. It's just a matter of what badge is on it. And the great drivers are able to maneuver themselves politically into a position where they can win. Like, politics is a massive part of what makes Formula One what it is. Being in the right place at the right time is a massive determination of how your career can play out. I mentioned this on a couple of weeks ago, Charlie, that Ross Brawn famously said that if they couldn't have got Lewis Hamilton when he was weighing up in 2012, but, you know, whether he wanted to stay with McLaren or go to Mercedes, do you know who the number two option was? It was Nico Hülkenberg. Could you imagine?
I've heard that story before.
Because Hülkenberg was killing it at Sauber at the time, and he was doing really good at Force India. It would have made sense. So could you imagine how different we are talking about Nico Hülkenberg's career if he'd even done 1 year at Mercedes as opposed to the Saubers, the Force Indias, the Renaults, and obviously now the Haas team that have littered his career of just midfield teams. So timing, politics, strength of car, they play massive roles in how drivers' careers are determined. I think Valentino Rossi probably may play a role in this whole change of team making you a better talent, because he did that in MotoGP. He dominated on a Honda, went to a Yamaha who was bad at the time, and immediately made them world champions, and people were like, yep, Rossi's the GOAT, which, understandably, because he is in bike racing. So I think a lot of people have applied that logic to Formula One, where I just don't think it's the same, because I think in the world of two wheels, and this is a small tangent, the rider makes more of a difference than in Formula One, where the best car will win, like 95% of the time. So my gut feeling is that Verstappen's already an all-time great. If you've won 3 championships and you've got 50 career wins, you are an all-time great. I don't care what circumstance, what car, what team. Yeah, and I know there's a lot of people that want to asterisk the crap out of Verstappen's career because of the cost cap, because of the way 2021 played out. I don't need those accolades. I watch the man every week. He is one of the best drivers I've ever seen. Raw speed, lack of mistakes, consistency. He ticks every single box. He is already, for me, one of the 10 best drivers that's ever been in Formula One for me. If you're a three-time world champion with 50 wins, you're in, as far as I'm concerned. You're in that ballpark. So that's how I look at it. How about you, Charlie?
Easiest no in the world for me. I had the exact same notes as everything that you just said. I can't. It's just not adding up for me. If Max goes on to win 24 and 25, he'll become a five-time world champion, and we're just going to be like, he only won them at Red Bull, so he doesn't matter. No, that's not how it works here.
You're likely talking a five-time champ with probably 70 to 80 wins, which is come on.
Yeah,
what more do you need?
It's not. I mean, like, even if you compare, like, to like Lewis and Michael, even though they've won others with other teams, like their majorities were with one team, five with Ferrari for Michael, like it just, you know, six with Mercedes for Lewis.
Six with Lewis. So and 80 of Hamilton's wins, something like 83 out of his 103 wins are with Mercedes rather than McLaren.
Yeah. So what are we just like? It's almost like, in my head, it's almost like saying, as soon as both of those drivers went to other teams and won that one championship with another team, they could have just given up because they'd be on the all-time great record, like, on the list. No, that's not, no. No, 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 no.
Look, I've never bought into that argument. And look, it's nice. It's a nice feather in the cap to have. It's a nice proof of your brilliance if you're able to win in different setups, different team environments, and whatnot, and you're able to make that work for you. Brilliant. You know, they're good for you if you can pull that off. But I've never looked at Schumacher's greatness and gone, yeah, that Benetton run really took him over the top. Like, no, like there is already a very strong argument about Michael as one of the all-time greats. Same with Lewis. I never look at it and I go, well, he won with two teams. That's what makes him so good. It's because he's a brilliant bloody racing driver, and he's won everywhere he's been in his F1 career. And I just don't think the two-team argument really works for me in that sense, because it's also a little bit disrespectful to the people in the back. Like, there's 1,000 people at Mercedes that help back up Lewis Hamilton to make him the driver that he is. Yes, you could argue he's arguably the most important piece, but there's still a structure behind them that is a huge contributor towards his success. So for me, Verstappen's already an all-time great. He's already there, in my opinion. I think if he's up there with Hamilton, Vettel, Alonso of this era, and he's statistically, he belongs in any era of this sport at this point. If you win three consecutive championships, and this what we're watching right now is probably the greatest single season in F1 history in terms of achievement and an accomplishment. He's already there. So this is a one from me, because he's already an all-time great. So I don't think he needs to go to a Ferrari or go to a McLaren or a Mercedes to prove it. He's already there. Maybe this is the Vettel fan in me kicking in because he won all four of his at Red Bull, but he was brilliant at Ferrari for a good chunk of his career there as well. He just didn't quite have enough to get the big one. As a Vettel fan, I will say this. 2017... 2018, he was the only person that was giving the Mercedes something to think about every week. That was enough for me. I knew Vettel was, he spearheaded two brilliant teams. That's enough for me, because he won double digit wins at Ferrari as well. So for me, it's a one. I think Verstappen's already an all-time great. He doesn't need to prove it elsewhere. He's him.
Yeah, I'm going with a one as well. I don't really have anything else to add, really, but it's just, I just can't get on board with stuff like that. I also don't think that, like, I don't know. I'm not very much of like a stat person, really. Like, I don't.
You're a vibes person.
Not just vibes, but like, I don't think like the amount of wins and championships and stuff defines like a great driver.
Not in all
aspects. Obviously, like it's a good visual for how good they are, but I just, yeah. Maybe I'm saying this as a Lando fan who has no wins currently.
But the vibes are immaculate, Charlie, and that's all that matters. No, look, stats will never tell the full picture. Jim Clark has 90 less wins than Lewis Hamilton, and a lot of people still think Clark's the greatest ever because of the era he raced in, the time he raced in, his win percentage records are off the charts. There is so many different ways to skin that cat to make arguments about great driver stats. I admit I am more of a stats person than the average person is, but there is more to it than that. And the way you feel, the way you watch somebody race, that emotional side of that makes us human. It's who we are. So of course that's going to play a role in how we look at things like GOAT status. And legacy debates are a huge part of sports. That's what we do. So, you know, it comes and goes. You know, that's how it goes. Anyway, take number four comes from Sandal Footbum. Again, great name. Sandal Footbum on Twitter says, Stroll and Perez have the same problem. They are both great drivers on their good days, but the bad days are too frequent. Five. Next take. No, I'm joking. Stroll and Perez have the same problem. They are both great drivers on their good days, but the bad days are too frequent. How do you feel about that, Charlie?
I mean, yeah. I guess. Like, I don't know. Both drivers have received a lot of flack this year, and like, I'm not defending that. It's quite understandable. But a few weeks ago, I made a comment on Lance, and I think it was after all the shoving saga that we will not speak about. I was actually quite worried about him. Like, something just wasn't. I don't think that something isn't like completely right with him at the moment. Like, he's very chill, Lance. Like, it's so funny that I receive all the transcripts and stuff that come from him, like, every week.
He's so laid back and sideways, like, sometimes.
They are the shortest transcripts every single week. Just one line. Yeah. And, like, he's just, I don't know, he's just such a chilled, driver. And I think people sometimes take that for him not wanting to be there, and I don't think that's the case. I think that's just his personality. And yeah, I something's just not clicking with him this season, and I don't think he is an awful driver. I do stand by that. I think he's better than what we have seen this season, and the reason I will probably never know, but I really do stand by that. I've had this thing in my head that has wondered whether it's that he came back from his injury at the start of the year, like, way too soon, and it started to have like some kind of like long lasting effect. Like, because I don't know if anyone's ever broke a bone or whatever, but when like you get your cast off, you literally feel like you can do anything. You're like, yes, yeah, I'm free. And like that adrenaline of probably being back in the car and stuff, like, probably did well to carry him through the first like couple of races or the first couple of months or whatever. But then the mistake started, and I just wonder if, like, you know, it could have caused a little bit of a setback. But he's never going to admit that, because they'll put him out of the car and then he won't be able to drive. But yeah, I'm not making any like excuses for how he has performed. Like, Fernando has literally carried Aston Martin this season, but something's not right. And Perez, again, I feel similarly. I think Red Bull would not have put him in a championship winning car if they didn't think that he was a good enough driver. There's no way. Right. He's also great. But again, I think it's been a mental thing for him this year. I'm fully convinced that at the start of the year, he thought that he could have challenged Max for the championship.
We were all hoping it.
And then it very quickly started slipping away from him, and I think he struggled with the fact that he's not as good as Max. And I can't even imagine like how that would feel as a driver, because every driver is, they're almost like wired to believe that they are the best in that sport, that they could beat everybody. And then to go in and in every single week and be consistently proven wrong, that actually, like, you can't beat this one person. I read something from Valtteri Bottas actually about his time at Mercedes, and he said something similarly. He was like, for ages he really struggled mentally because he knew that he could, he thought he was the best, like he could have got onto Lewis's level and stuff. And then he was like, one day it hit me that actually, like, I'm not that good. And he was like, he really struggled with that. And I just wonder if that's kind of what's happened to Perez this year. But again, no excuses, but both of them are great drivers. They've just, it's just not been their entire, like, their season, really.
It's easy to forget that Lance Stroll dominated European Formula 3 to get into F1 in the first place. And there were some good drivers in, like, I think George Russell was in that series with him the time he won it. You know, look, Stroll's had a poor season. There's no arguing that, you know? And he's absolutely struggled compared to Fernando. I mean, great weekend this weekend to follow him home in fifth in Brazil. That was a step in the right direction, and I hope that continues, because if Stroll does that week to week, no one's going to complain about him. No one's expected him to beat Fernando over a full season. But if he can just get close to that, then that, you're golden, quite frankly. And yeah, with Perez, he got the Red Bull seat in the first place because he won a race in a Force India and was fourth in the championship in 2020 in a racing point. Sergio Perez was the midfield driver of this era. And that, and that's going to sound like I'm being condescending to a degree, but he was that guy who had a complete knack and brilliance of being in the right place at the right time to take advantage of chaos races, which happened. You get two or three of those a year in an F1 season. And, like, Perez had a knack of just being in the right place at the right time and finding ways of making it work. That's the legacy of his career before he went to Red Bull. And that's what got him the top tier seat in the first place, because it was either him or Alex Albon, and Red Bull broke their policy to hire him. Like, that's how good Perez was. So yeah, absolutely. If, like, he's going to retire with at least 5 wins to his name, which in F1 is already a really high number. To win one race in Formula 1 is an incredible accomplishment. To win 5 is outstanding. And he's had a great career. There's a good chance he's championship runner-up by the end of the season. And yeah, that's, not many drivers get that to that level in Formula 1. Like, it's you're in the top 1% of the 100% at that point. So yeah, it's, I generally agree with this take, is what I would say. I think even Stroll, in the middle of what is his worst season in Formula 1, he's had moments in his career where he's had genuinely outstanding weekends. I mean, I remember Turkey in 2020, where he was leading that race. He qualified on pole and was winning until his front wing collapsed. He had a 10-second lead in that race. I remember that race. Stroll's incredible in the wet. He's had podiums in a Williams. Like, he can drive a car. He kept Sebastian Vettel honest at Aston Martin. Like, there's a good driver there. I'm sure of it. I think that's probably why people have dunked on him so hard for this season, because we've seen better from him. I know it's easy to rag on him because of his dad and his rich boy background, and sometimes he is a bit flat and deflating in interviews. It makes him a very easy target. But he's not to the point where I'd say get him out of the sport entirely. He's a good driver. He's had moments of genuine brilliance. It's just frustrating when he's having such a bad season by comparison, because it's going to make you dunk on him harder. And it's kind of the same with Checo. Like, I remember he had, I think, 7 or 8 podiums before he'd even got to Red Bull. To do that in cars like Racing Point and Sauber back in the day, when he started his career over there, there was a lot of talent. Checo got into a McLaren in year 3 of his career for good reason, because he was that good in a Sauber. Didn't work out for the year he was there with Jensen, but the take is, I think, is completely correct. And like that, yeah, there are they can be very good on their day, and yeah, we are comparing them at the moment to all time greats. That's part of the problem. Fernando Alonso is one of the best drivers of all time, in my opinion, and Sergio Perez is driving against Max Verstappen, a team that's been catered around him for the last half decade plus. And Max is an all-time great. You know, that being able to stack yourself up against them is always going to be an incredibly difficult task. Go on, Charlie.
You didn't say a number.
Oh, want me to give you a number as well? Okay, fine. I'm gonna say five. I completely agree. I think they are great drivers on their good days, but I think, yeah, compared to the very highest level that we talk about in Formula One, then yeah, their bad days by comparison is what leads them to get criticized so much. So yeah, I'm going to say five. I completely agree.
Yeah, I'm going to go four. I just because I'm never 100% certain about anything in my life, so.
That's the way life is sometimes, you know.
Yeah, but I agree. I like maybe we're just like really naive,
maybe,
and see the best in everybody. But
we're optimists,
yeah. But
sunshine, yeah, and rainbows.
I completely agree. I don't know. Especially Lance. I feel like he's had a lot of stick this year, and I don't think it's all quite deserved. So. Yeah,
his career is better than what this year has shown at Aston Martin, most definitely.
I think it's really difficult. I think people just kind of like see the now and forget sometimes about the past. So you know, like
that sport, it's very yeah, what have you done for me lately kind of environment. Yeah. You know, that's Daniel Ricciardo. I've used that phrase to describe him for many a year because that McLaren run was so bad, but his Renault one was so good. You know, that's what's kind of led to this confusion about him. You know, that's a discussion for another day. But it's absolutely a what have you done for me lately kind of environment, and that that has pros and cons in its own right. Final take of the episode comes from Tony Dobson, who says, this season is going to do a decade's worth of damage to TV ratings for the sport. To the point, Tony. This season is going to do a decade's worth of damage to TV ratings. Charlie, are we doomed here because of how quote-unquote boring this season has been?
No. I really disagree with this. I will be the first person to hold my hands up and admit that this season has not been the spiciest. It has not been the most thrilling. Nope. We haven't had a championship battle. We're probably all craving one. But I have been through these eras of dominance once or twice before. And whilst Verstappen's does, I feel, hit a little bit different than the past, I'm still here. Like I'm still religiously watching every single session. I'm still tweeting my little life away talking about F1. It's still a conversation topic to every person I talk to. It's still my biggest passion in my life. I love the sport, and I'm Delulu enough to keep believing that one day we will have a battle between everybody and it will be the best thing since sliced bread. Like, I just think that when you love the sport that much, there's nothing really that could make me fully be like, I'm putting this down. And I know it's slightly different now because I feel like I'm talking from a job perspective. I have to watch every session.
Right.
But even like, even beforehand, like sometimes like this year, I mean, I've worked every single race bar one and I still got up, and that was Japan, and it was the day of my cousin's wedding, and I still got up to watch every single session. So like, you know, like that was that could have been my weekend off. I could have just sat and watched that later, but I didn't. I had to watch it at the same time, even though I knew full well what was going to happen. And I just think, like, I don't know. I love the sport so much that I just can't imagine. And it's not just me. There's loads of people that are so passionate about it. They're not just going to drop it after like a couple of dominant seasons. And not only that, but Drive to Survive continues to be,
to bring fans into the sport. I don't know. I really don't think that F1 needs to worry too much about its ratings, and neither does anyone else, quite frankly. If you want to watch, cool, watch. If you don't, I don't know, go and enjoy golf. Something like, I just, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dear. Yeah, I need to make this abundantly clear. Even if I wasn't working for WTF1, and if you know me well enough, Motorsport 101 on the side as well, I've been a content creator for F1 for 12 years. Like, I would still be watching every race weekend, even if I wasn't doing that. And look, Charlie, I'll let you in on a little secret. Come closer, come closer. This is how the sausage is made in F1. Like, there are more boring seasons than great ones in F1 history. Yeah. This is how it's always gone. It's a mechanical sport first. It is an engineering competition first. The best car will win. That's why Formula One rotates regulations every few years to try. That's their way of trying to be entertaining indirectly, by resetting the board and seeing who can win this new engineering competition, which is when the new regulations come through every while. I grew up a massive Schumacher fan. Do you know how pissed off I was in 2005 when they changed the tyre rules so that they had to go for the whole race instead, and Ferrari were immediately arse for a whole year? Like, as a 13, 14-year-old Ferrari fan, I was mad as hell about that. Looking back on it now, I understand why, because Bernie was crapping himself thinking that, oh no, if Michael wins every year, no one's going to watch us anymore. Mm-hmm. Every sport has to deal with that fine balance between sporting integrity and entertainment purposes, because if you can't have one without the other. It's getting the balance right, and every sport has to deal with that problem. I mean, look, I'm a huge NASCAR fan. I watched Ryan Blaney win the Sprint Cup title this past weekend. Was Ryan Blaney the best driver in NASCAR this year? Absolutely not. But they have a playoff format, and that's how playoff sports works. It's the best person on the day that wins. That's the bed that NASCAR has chosen to lay in. It's the exact same thing in Formula One. Look, it's I get it, you know, that this has been arguably the most dominant F1 season maybe ever. It's looking that way. It's certainly angling that way. And I wouldn't blame anybody for thinking it was boring. That's a completely valid, you know, and a valid take on 2023. And, you know, of course we want it to go around a little bit. Of course we want two or three teams or whatever to be in the mix. We wouldn't want that as a sports fan. But this is also how F1's always been. Like, the great seasons are an outlier more than the norm. I mean, let's do a quick check back here. How many great title fights have we had since let's go back to, say, 2010? Like, 2010, 2012, I would say. 2014, if you count the one team fights we had with Mercedes, which, you know, a lot of people didn't like either because Mercs were so dominant when the turbo hybrid started as well. And only one team won the majority of those races. Even then, you could maybe argue one way or the other. But let's be generous and include. So let's say 10, 12, 14, 16, 17 at a push because of when Ferrari's title campaign collapsed late on. So maybe 17. Then you're looking at what? 21? And then 22 was obviously, you know, we've had 5 or 6 in the last 15 years, roughly. That's less than half. You know, they're outliers, unfortunately. And that's kind of how F1's always been. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I do sometimes feel like the narrative around, like, the sport being boring and, like, it, you know, losing viewership and things like that, it comes from us being so spoiled in 2021, because that was,
it was an all-timer. It was, yeah, an all-time great title, yeah, fight. Even if you ignore the way it ended, you can't say you weren't captivated by the ending.
No.
Right? No. You know, and that was an even before Abu Dhabi, it was an all-time great, yeah, feud. All-time, yeah, great. We were spoiled.
We were spoiled, and I think that's where I think people were expecting that in 2022, and people are just, like, grappling to get that back. And I will admit, I love a title fight. Like, 2021 was probably one of my favorite seasons, like, ever. But
it will age better in the long run.
Yeah,
I'm certain of that.
But I don't find F1 boring. I don't sit there and go, of course, not every race can be a banger. Not every race is a
classic.
Absolutely
not.
And we've had a lot less of them this year. But certainly. I still enjoy it. I still sit here and I'm still like, that was really fun. And I would still be like that even if it wasn't my job, I'd still absolutely love it. I have not missed like an F1 session race, apart from like I said earlier, when I used to work Fridays and I used to have to miss practice or whatever. But I've not really missed like the majority of a weekend for years. Like I cannot really remember. Even last year, me and my partner went to Formula E, and it was the same weekend as the Hungarian Grand Prix. Mm. And we sat there before Formula E started and watched the race on our phones. Like,
that's what we do.
I'm not missing. Yeah. So it's just, I don't know. I don't think F1's got anything to worry about, really. So
if you're listening to this podcast, you are probably a hardcore F1 fan. You are probably watching every race, every qualifying session. You probably follow a bunch of them on social media. And look, I could see why this takes come around because of the back of the DTS era, and there has been a genuine wave of new fans that have come in that you're always going to be afraid might hop off the wagon again. And there might be in the long run, but a lot of people have just woken up and realized, no, this is what F1 normally is. Like, I think there's something that's just out there that, like, two-thirds of the championship-winning seasons, the team that won it won more than half the Grand Prix that year. Dominance is an embedded part of Formula One because it is not, it's not a sport that is won at random. It's a sport, it's a competition where the best team wins.
Yeah.
And when the best team wins, they will win a lot. That is generally how it's always been. So, and look, it doesn't, like, I've made my peace with that a long time ago as an F1 fan. If you're expecting every season to be like 2021, then now let me introduce you to the Premier League, where Manchester City have won five of the last six league titles. You know, it's like, this is just how sports go sometimes. Sometimes there are dynasties, sometimes there are dominant eras, and sometimes you just got to accept that. It's part of the story. It's part of what makes sport what it is. So with that in mind, I'm going to say two. I think there absolutely will be a drop-off to some degree in the long run when people realize that this is how the sausage is made. It's like, there's that analogy I said earlier. I'm not going to go all the way and say one, but I don't think it's going to be a decade's worth of damage. We've got a new regulation set coming out in 2 years' time. You know, there will be a reset. It will jumble the order up again. There will be new stories, new rivalries, new feuds. That's how the sport has always been. And something will come along. It always does. And we'll be there to talk about it. So I'm going to say two. I don't think it's good. I think there will be a bit of a drop in the short term, but a decade's worth of damage? Nah. If we want to talk about damage in the sport, get it off pay TV channels. That's a discussion for another day. I'm going to say two. Charlie, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. I would also go two. It's so hard to deal with like drop-offs and stuff, I think, because, I mean, you just don't know how much of those people just genuinely like, you know, this isn't for me anymore. I mean, like, I grew up watching Formula One with my dad and stuff, but was I into it fully that whole since I was 2 years old? No. It took me like, you know, it was weekends of just kind of watching it because it was on the TV. And I've told this story so many times. When I was younger, I used to ask my parents like why they used to race in people's gardens in Monaco. Like, I couldn't get my head around it.
Yeah.
And like, I just, you know, things are gradual, I think, sometimes. And there were times that like I turned 18 and I was like, alcohol is the best thing ever. So then I used to go out all the time and could not be bothered to get up at God knows what time to watch the races. You know, there's so many like life factors that not everybody 100%. Can be like a 100% hardcore fan all the time. We're just very fortunate that we have to be at the moment, but there's always going to be drop-offs in sport, in every sport at some point. To blame Max Verstappen or to blame Red Bull or to blame dominance for it, I think is wrong. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with what you said at the top of the segment. The dominance is hitting a bit differently because it's Max compared to Lewis. I think there is absolutely something to that, with Lewis's popularity may have stemmed the bleeding on that fact a little bit because Lewis was so transcendent and popular. But like you said, everybody's story is different. I wasn't a hardcore F1 fan from the moment I started watching. I dropped off when Schumacher retired for a little bit. I got back on the wagon when Hamilton became world champ. Because personally, as a black man, seeing a black man succeed got me back into it. It was like, oh my God, Lewis Hamilton, he's brilliant. Look at this guy. I'm sure a lot of people that have been fans for a long time have had their levels of interest wane, go up and down. Of course you're going to be into it more when there's an actual title fight. How many people watched to the end of 2021? Like, how many people that don't normally watch F1 went out of their way to watch that race?
Oh, honestly, like, I used to work in it. For anyone who doesn't know, I used to work in a nursery. And, like, I walked into work on, like, the Monday after that Grand Prix, and somebody that had literally, like, one of my colleagues who had never said one word to me about Formula One in the whole time I knew her suddenly was like, oh, what happened with Hamilton at the weekend? And I was like, what did you just ask me? Like, because right. They'd heard about it because it was so, like, out there. So,
Know that feeling. I used to work in a bookies exactly the same way. I would never get asked F1 questions until DTS became more popular. And when that 2021 finale happened, I had people in the bookies come up and ask me about F1 because they knew I was an F1 guy. That's how it goes. That's how sports go. Sometimes you're the talk of the town, other times you're not. That's just how it goes. But that'll do it for this episode of Hot Take Wednesday, because we've gone nearly 70 minutes on this one, and that was fun. I know you guys have had no problem with longer shows, so I guess this is one of those examples for you. But before we get out of here, again, one more time, if you've got a sprint-related take, get it in next week. You have a much better chance of getting on the show. Look out for Extra Heat as well on the WTF1 website tomorrow. If you want some even more opinions from me, Charlie, and from Hannah in regards to anything we've talked about on this week's show. And of course, you can follow us on social medias or WTF1 official. You can follow me at Dre_WTF1. You can follow Charlie at CharlieWTF1 as well. We'll be back next week in the run-up to Vegas for a sprint special of Hot Takes Wednesday. I'll see you then. I've been Dre Harrison. She's been Charlie Williams. Sayonara.
Bye.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.